From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, a live exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. Today on the program, we have artist Calder Kamen, the new face of the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art's Art Truck, who tells us about her project, Impact Proof, and her hope to appeal to both young and old alike.
When I started making this work, or all my artwork, I really think it found its strength when I thought about what would Calder at 10 really love to see. But then that person is still inside of me. So I think young or old will appreciate it because there are some very adult issues or just, you know, human issues that everyone should learn about.
That conversation and your summary of today's top local headlines, just ahead on The Rundown, here on KCPW. And thanks for tuning into KCPW this afternoon. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later in the program, we have a discussion with artist Calder Kamen, the new face of the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art's Art Truck. But first up, local headlines and political cornflakes. Federal and local officials met in Draper on Friday to celebrate the completion of a new light rail line. The new tracks line will connect Draper to Salt Lake City and other areas in the region. The project was the final step in a broader effort by UTA to improve public transportation by 2015. The program, called Frontlines 2015, finished 2 years early and $300 million under budget. Among those marking the occasion were Governor Gary Herbert, Senator Orrin Hatch, and new Transportation Secretary Anthony Fox. Secretary Fox earned the reputation as a public transportation advocate as mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. He says commuters in growing communities are constantly battling increased travel times. But Fox says public transit can help alleviate that problem.
The great thing about this track and the train that'll travel on it is that the trip will always be the same amount of time. And that is worth its weight in gold, because many families in this country simply want their time back. They want the time to spend with their families, the time to get to their soccer games, the time to get to work, and that's what you're doing by building this vision.
The new transportation secretary, who was sworn into office in July, was warmly welcomed by Utah Governor Gary Herbert. Herbert also lauded the state's ability to complete the project efficiently.
I'm here to emphasize to you that's the Utah way. That's how we do things here in Utah. We do things on time. We do them under budget. We live within our means. We don't borrow unnecessarily, and consequently, we don't have an overburden put upon the taxpayers and the people of Utah.
Senator Hatch, who voted along with 99 other senators to unanimously confirm Fox's nomination, says he looks forward to working with the new secretary.
I'm particularly pleased to have the secretary here. He's a really fine man. He really has done a great job in Charlotte, and he's open to all of us. He's been open to us representing Utah.
On Saturday, UTA is planning a food drive to celebrate the Draper extension. From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., passengers can ride UTA for free in exchange for a non-perishable food item. Officially, track service to Draper begins on Sunday. Analysts say Utah's unemployment rate ticked down in July, and the pace of job growth is on the rebound after 2 months of slowdown. The Department of Workforce Services reports Friday that Utah's jobless rate was 4.6% in July. That's down slightly from 4.7% in June and well below the national jobless rate of 7.4%. Nearly 65,000 people are unemployed and actively seeking work. State officials say all 11 private sector industries have seen their job numbers rise since the same time last year, although government employment dropped. Overall, the state is more than 43,000 jobs up from where it was last July. Governor Gary Herbert issued a statement bragging about Utah's economy, saying he runs into people everywhere who want to copy the state's success. Orrin Hatch's presidential campaign finally came to an end this week. Yep, you heard that right. What exactly does that mean? I posed that question to Thomas Burr, Washington correspondent for the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes, a daily online roundup of Utah politics. So you wrote this week that Senator Orrin Hatch's presidential campaign is finally over. I thought that it was over like 13 years ago. What's been going on in the meantime?
Yeah, you know, not much is the quick answer. I'm sure most Utahns probably remember the very short stint that Orrin Hatch spent as a presidential candidate in 1999. And this one kind of shocked me too, but I was looking through campaign filings this week and noticed that the Orrin Hatch Presidential Exploratory Committee had finally closed. I was a little shocked at that too, for that what's been happening. And pretty much the answer is nothing. They've had this committee open ever since 1999 and just never closed it. Finally, they got to the point where they weren't raising any money. There was no reason to keep reporting on it, so they closed it down. And I guess to the relief of some Utahns and the concern of some others, that Orrin Hatch will no longer be running for the White House.
So, but is that the door closing on his presidential aspirations ever?
You know, his chief of staff told me that he's planning on staying on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue for now. But, you know, never say never, because you can always start a new exploratory committee, though I don't think Orrin Hatch has any plans to do that just as now.
A new poll shows who is more likely to take the blame if the federal government is shut down over a fight about Obamacare. So who's more likely to be the fall guy there?
You know, this is actually kind of interesting, because this was a Republican poll, a conservative poll by the Heritage Action Foundation. And essentially, you know, they wrote a poll and were looking for results to say, see, we're right. You know, we really should fight till, you know, the death on the Obamacare stuff. But their poll results actually show that 28% of those surveyed would blame Republicans, 22% would blame Obama, 19% would blame congressional Democrats. So even of their poll, more Republicans were polled on this. They were Republican-leaning districts. Actually found that the Republicans would be to blame if they came down to a government shutdown. I think that was one of those very surprising findings in the results. You know, this is, of course, one of those things. There are a lot of ways you can skew polls, a lot of ways you can ask questions. The way you direct your poll and who you ask will always give you the results you'd hope you want. This one, though, is a little bit of a surprise, because it actually shows that even among the most Republican poll you can find here, they still think that the GOP would be at fault.
Wow. So even in their own party, and even in very strong supporters of their own party, you have Republicans saying we would blame our own party if the government were to shut down.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's the concern here. And, you know, of course, no one really wants to see a government shut down in the end, because that's a lot of problems that could come out of that. But this Republican poll seemed to find that, like nationwide, Republicans could be the ones who take the brunt of everything.
You know, for a while we had the fiscal cliff threat, and it seems like it always is looming over the horizon at all times now.
The only way to get anything done in this town is to force everyone to come to, like, the midnight 11:59 vote, where you either have to do something or everything shuts down. I think that's, like, it's the new way of doing business here. Let's wait till the absolute last minute.
Government by terror. Thomas Burr, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thomas Burr is a Washington correspondent with the Salt Lake Tribune and author of Political Cornflakes. We speak with Burr weekly, and there's a link to Political Cornflakes on our website, kcpw.org. And a 56-year-old woman is dead after suffering apparent heat exhaustion during a hike with her husband in southern Utah. Garfield County deputies say the couple had been hiking the Brimhall Double Bridge Trail on Thursday when the woman started to experience medical problems. Authorities say the man drove to the nearby town of Boulder, Utah, to seek help. But when emergency crews found her, she had already died. Officials say she appears to have succumbed to heat exhaustion. Her body has been sent to the medical examiner's office for further investigation. The woman's death is at least the sixth this summer for hikers in southern Utah. Three people have died on hikes at The Wave, and one has died in the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, and another in Canyonlands National Park. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. That's our local news summary. Stay with us. And now on the program, we turn to our discussion with Calder Kamen. Kamen is an artist and art administrator in Kansas City, Missouri, but was recently announced as the new face of the Art Truck, a project of the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art. I spoke with Kamen about intersections between ecology and artistic expression, and about her art conservation hybrid project called Impact Proof. Calder Kamen, first off, thanks for joining us in the studio today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So first, for our listeners who may not be familiar, can you maybe explain what UMOCA's Art Truck program is, and when does it run, where does it go, what does it do?
Sure. I know a little bit about it. The curator of education or director of education is Jared Stefferson, and he's been running the program for about 2 years. I believe it's been around for five. But, you know, just bringing art to new places and new audiences, which is definitely what got me interested in it. I'm part of a residency in Kansas City called the Charlotte Street Foundation's Urban Culture Project, where they use unused office spaces for artist studios, and it's competitive. So I met Jared at the conference and sat down at the right breakfast table at the right time, yeah, and just had a conversation, and I put together an open studios for the Charlotte Street residents. So I invited him to come. And he, you know, one of eight people that came, but it was the right eight people. And we really hit it off in the conversations about what I'm doing with my work. And I've shifted focus where I have a ceramics background. Okay. But in the last 2 years, I've been trying to build a body of work that is focused on education and programming, because it's kind of what I do for the Art Institute, is all this career development programming. And then my work has definitely been focusing on education and kind of storytelling about these anomalies of human, animal, and man-made coevolution. So just knowing all of that about me and just the program, I mean, it's the best fit I could imagine, is that this education-driven program that's going to go find new audiences, children, adults, everyone.
Like, because there's actually a pun there in education-driven, because
right.
it does drive around. And so it's a truck that goes, and it's going, I think you have, how long are you doing it for?
It's for a year. So I'm the 2013 to 2014 artist, and it'll kick off August 16th will be the opening. And then at 11 o'clock on Saturday, August 17th, I'll be giving the first workshop. So at least one of the projects is public, and then it has an education component where there's a hands-on activity and then one that follows up with a crowdsourcing activity.
So what does that look like? I mean, what does that project consist of?
Well, there's a couple of pieces in there. It's very new work, probably been building it in the last year or two. But there's a few pieces, Impact Proof in particular. It's vinyl decals that I've designed and Illustrator drawings of birds. And what I had, on my walk to studio one day, I discovered a kestrel, which is a small falcon, beautiful little bird, had run into a plexiglass bus station. Mm. And I tried to rescue it with the local nature center, and it did not survive. But I found out that if you put an image of a bird on a window, a bird will change its course to avoid what it perceives as another animal's airspace. So at the time, I was changing my work from just replicating animals to wanting to interact with them more with some other projects, and then Impact Proof came about. And it's not an entirely new idea to make decals that are in the shape of birds, but I'm kind of interested in expanding my practice to where I have maybe a product line as well, and here's my version of these decals.
And how you can help avoid these unnecessary, bird deaths.
So windows are the number one killer of birds. Over 100, I think it's 100 million to 1 billion a year. And a second runner-up or close second is cats. So it's us and our creature comforts that cause these issues, but the birds perceive the glass as either a fly-through space or it reflects the scenery around them.
So I know you're interested in the intersection of technology and conservation. Can you tell me how you got into this topic?
I mean, how technology is fusing with conservation. So I participated in the Audubon Christmas Bird Count this last January, and I was the youngest attendee and very welcomed, because I could see and maybe hear things that the other birders could not. But they were very well equipped with technology. They introduced me to iBird, which is an app on your iPhone that has an enormous array of birds, their sounds, their photographs. So here was a beautiful marriage of, you know, the old and the new, and then also conservation. And really technology, I think, is going to be important in conservation, science in general, to advances in technology to redeem our kind of misguided advances. But Impact Proof, so there's going to be a hands-on activity that comes with the truck. So anybody that visits the truck, I've created MDF board, CNC routed stencils of my bird designs, and people can trace the bird and make a paper decal, and it functions just the same as my vinyl decals. And then in addition to the hands-on activity, I have created an illustrated bird survey. So it's my illustrations of Salt Lake City area birds. And I've used, Audubon has an eBird, it's eBird.org. It's their crowdsourcing site, so I participated in the backyard bird count. And you just hit the time and date, log in, hit the time and date, and the birds that you saw in your yard. And that goes directly to Audubon to help them with their research.
So is that something that you have? Where can people see that or participate in it? Is that they can go to eBird.org and just that's...
Well, eBird.org will at least introduce them to Audubon, and they could sign up themselves. But we have an eBird account just for the Art Truck. So you can log in Art Truck, and it the password's being shared on the UMOCA website and all the directions. But I just created an illustrated bird survey. I just really wanted to welcome the community since they've been so welcoming of me and partner together in helping learn about the birds around them.
And then how or why did you start applying this public aspect to your art?
I had a ceramics background, and I would... All of my work has always been very research-based. I love to read and learn about science. But there was this change when I knew that just being a gallery artist was unsustainable and unfulfilling, because I would make these sculptures that were so much about my research, but then you wouldn't know that by looking at the sculpture. So it was when I thought about how can this be interactive and public, and then maybe also include programming, that broke down all of my practices to where it's now this experience, and you can participate in different facets of it.
I wanted to ask you about some of your previous endeavors in, and one of the things that I read about was, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right, is synanthropes. Okay.
So those are animals that thrive in the human environment, and that's primarily what I've been focusing on. The synanthrope station is, I collect refuse for birds to reuse for their avian architecture.
All right, let's hear that in the basis of terms, like what does that consist of?
I collect litter and process it for birds. If I collect litter from a site, make it smaller strips, and then I've created ceramic capsules that it's kind of, somebody funnily coined it the Home Depot for birds. So they're supply stations, and birds will use the refuse to build their nests, and just by observing birds, my perception of nature has really changed. They see there's no separation between the man-made and the natural. It is all their environment. So here they were using plastic in their nests and benefiting from it because the synthetic materials last longer. Or cigarette butts contain the nicotine, and then they're benefiting from the nicotine as a parasitic. And their babies are growing healthier. So this was definitely just a change in thought of what I had learned growing up about what we do wrong.
So birds will come to these stations that you've created, and they'll take out bits of trash and use it in creating their nests. But also, would you stock those stations with cigarette butts?
If they were around the area, I'm not infusing more trash into a location. It's directly from the site. So I picked up trash from where the Art Truck is parked, and that'll be featured in there. And they birds don't like to go very far to collect their trash or collect their nesting materials. They take hundreds of trips in a day, but in a close proximity. So if I have one of these ceramic capsules hanging from a tree, they will make their synthetic nests in that tree. Kurt wants me to maybe bring up a project, but just being in Salt Lake, I don't know if it's touchy.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. We'll give it a shot. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do have one project that does focus on there's a negative issue, and that is how birth control affects amphibians. So the synthetic estrogen is being released into the water system after a woman's taken it. And it's affecting frogs by either they're all reproducing as female or the males have lost their sex drive. So I I was on birth control and just having all these terrible side effects. So I started looking to what's happening in nature and discovered this. So I created a piece called Ripple Effects. And a lot of my public projects, so they'll have a public piece, they have this workshop part, and then they have something called an infographic. And so they're they're illustrations of how the project functions and a little bit of background on it and what it does. So I created an infographic for Ripple Effects that also explains what is happening with the synthetic estrogen. And then also I collected birth control packets. And often I love how some of my work will bring in the community versus me being a ceramic artist inside of a studio. I had to ask all my girlfriends, you know, do you have any birth control packets that I could right. use, any empty ones? And I cut out the little frogs in the birth control packets. And, you know, just materiality-wise, they're bumpy like a little frog. And then I pinned them on the wall like specimens.
That's interesting because there's sort of a double thing going on where the effect of trying to not maybe increase the population thereby might have a positive effect could have a pretty detrimental effect on it at the same time. So are there solutions to that that you've encountered?
Well, education, I think, is most important. I think that people will take things, do things, go places without having a second thought as to their impact. But it's a bigger issue. It's that corporations are going to have to think a little bit more wisely. I mean, we can start at a grassroots level, but it's going to take some bigger things to make an impact. So that's why in the meantime, I'm inviting people to look at nature just a little bit differently.
That's a really interesting project. And I guess they can go to Yumoka's website. I'm wondering if all of the art truck is geared at children, or if it's, now that we've had this conversation about birth control.
The Ripple Effects project is not in the truck. I mean, when you go in there, it does appear very childlike, maybe. But when you're going to talk about difficult things, I was just saying the other day, it's nice to have a little spoonful of sugar with it. So here, my aesthetic is very much about driven kind of by animation. I mean, when I started making this work or all my artwork, I really think it found its strength when I thought about what would Calder at 10 really love to see. But then that person is still inside of me. So I think young or old will appreciate it because there are some very adult issues or just, you know, human issues that everyone should learn about. And the projects, they're from, I would say, from age 2 to into your older years. But that's definitely my audience is everyone. But I always find that I really have wonderful conversations with the very young and the very old.
So when you go out in this truck, I don't know if you're driving around the state or the city.
I won't be here. I'm just here for the week to install the exhibition and then give the preliminary workshop. They do have an educator. And upon request from schools, they will visit a school and offer these educational workshops and teach them about my work.
And then finally, how can people, where can the public go and how can they, if they want to see the art truck in their community and have their kids learn about your work, and do you know how they can maybe request that?
Yeah, well, definitely come out Friday night or Saturday morning when I'll be giving the workshop. And then there's information on Utah MoCo's site to contact the museum educator. And then they also have a list of public events so that anybody can visit.
Calder Kamen, I want to thank you for coming in and speaking with us today. And best of luck with this project.
Thank you.
That was UMOCA's current art truck artist, Calder Kamen. There's an opening reception at the museum tonight from 6 to 9. Or you can take part in the project with Calder tomorrow from 11 to 1. You can hear this and all of the interviews we feature on our program at our website, kcpw.org. And that's all the time we have today for our program. The Rundown today was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Monday on the program, tune in for a discussion with Valerie Larrabee, Executive Director of Utah Pride, to hear about a challenge to Utah's Amendment 3, defining marriage as being between a man and a woman. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for joining us today. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.